Hello and welcome to The Sound Off, a podcast where school safety takes center stage. My name is Michelle Gay and I'm the co-founder and executive director of Safe and Sound Schools. We're committed to protecting every school and every student every day. In today's episode, we're changing up our usual format in honor of World Autism Month. Featuring topics very close to the heart of Safe and Sound Schools, this unique roundtable episode focuses on supporting students with autism and other special needs and explores why safety plans need to be designed with every student in mind. Joining me are Jeff Snyder, an inspiring thought leader and speaker with autism, and Nick Savarese, representing the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation, an organization supporting families of those with autism. Their work aligns with Safe and Sound Schools' Especially Safe program, which helps educators address diverse safety and security needs in our school communities, from developmental disabilities to communication challenges, medical needs, mobility challenges, and more. We'll discuss how regular school drills can be challenging for students with various special needs, whether that's due to sensory overload, anxiety, or different communication styles. Our guests will offer ideas on how schools can adjust their usual procedures to make all students feel safe and protected. Recent tragic events in our schools remind us of the constant need for thoughtful and compassionate approaches to school safety. We need to go deeper than standard solutions and develop safety plans that truly embrace the diversity within our classrooms. This episode is for educators, parents, and anyone who wants to learn about creating inclusive, safe environments for all learners. It's a conversation about understanding distinct needs, finding alternatives, and working together to make sure every child feels safe and supported at school. So let's join the roundtable now to learn how to empower students with special needs by creating comprehensive safety plans that ensure every student can feel safe and sound. Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Michelle Gay, Executive Director and co-founder of Safe and Sound Schools, and I am joined by two of my favorite game changers from the New England area, I'll say, because I know, Jeff, you're not in Boston right now. You're not in the Boston area. But I've got Jeff Snyder, who is a phenomenal thought leader, advocate, speaker, now MC. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we've got Nick Savarese from the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation in the Boston area as well. We've got some roots there with you guys. So it's always fun to catch up and talk about cool game-changing ideas. I specifically want to dive in terms of recognizing and supporting the needs of individuals with special needs. And we all have autism in common, the three of us. You know, it's part of our lives, part of our families. You guys know our little Josephine that we lost at Sandy Hook was on the spectrum and brought so many challenges and so many gifts to our lives with autism. And so that's what originally connected us with the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation. And then through the foundation, connected with you, Jeff, and only just beginning to scratch the surface of all the good stuff that you're doing out there. So why don't we start with you, Jeff? I see you blogging a lot about this very topic, about really supporting the specific needs of individuals who may have special needs, but specifically people with autism in a school setting. You know, we do a lot with sort of the general population and addressing the needs of typical students and staff members. But the reality is that many of us in a school community are not typical, and increasingly more and more many of us are on the spectrum. So what are some of the things that you're exploring in your blog and in your work lately?
Well, for one thing, first of all, little bit of my educational background. I am a graduate of Seekonk Public Schools. I graduated in 2007. And upon my graduation, I was the first student with autism to complete pre-K through grade 12 within the school system without coming from other towns or school districts. But one of the things that really challenged me a lot was school safety drills. And I remember the big thing was fire drills. And fire drills were obviously, you know, sensory overloading, you know, it's very chaotic, and it's all just about, you're just prone to sensory overloads. And one of the things that I used to have, one of the things that was put on my individualized educational plan or IEP was that I would get taken out of the building before they would pull the alarm. And a lot of schools, you know, don't see that because they think that the student is trying to get out of the drill, when in reality, you know, it's a sensory thing. So my mission is to make schools aware that school safety drills are bothersome and they're but we're not trying to take the student out of doing the drill. We're just trying to take the edge off. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Twister with Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton, they're not trying to stop tornadoes altogether. They're trying to take the edge off by creating an advanced warning system. So that's really what part of my mission as an advocate public speaker is to share my experiences with schools, with parents, with teachers, and say, you know, we can take the edge off without getting the student out of the drill entirely.
So I love so many things about what you just said, Jeff, because our kids are not necessarily trying to be non-compliant. Families are not trying to say that, you know, the drills aren't important, that safety is not important. In fact, for many of our students with autism, there's a lot of anxiety about being safe, you know, that also increases anxiety around those drills. I think to your point, though, and bringing Twister in as kind of a neat little analogy, it's important for our schools to step back and go, well, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to make sure that our kids know what to do. They know what their options are and they can be safe should we ever have crisis X or Y or Z, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that they've done that traditionally is through drills. And if they're really good, they've hopefully done some teaching before ever even thinking about a drill. But that's another whole conversation that we could have. But are there other ways that we could potentially prepare a student who is overwhelmed by those sounds, whose anxiety is ramped up by those sounds, or, you know, for sensory is big in our family. It's excruciating for, you know, it's not only anxiety provoking and uncomfortable for many students with autism or with anxiety disorders. It's unbearable, you know, those sounds, that, you know, level of stimulation. So, you know, are there other ways that we can explore for doing the same thing? Have you run into any cool ideas, Jeff?
Well, I actually created a presentation that I have presented several times called School Safety Drills in Autism. And what I put into the presentation are tips and tricks for teachers and school administrators and possibly parents, and parents especially, to give them ideas in ways to help the student cope with the drill. Like, for example, in the presentation, I talk about school bus evacuation drills, which, believe it or not, are not practiced, you know, by everybody, which is a shock. And an example of what I put in is to have the student do a custom drill with the bus driver, because they could know the bus driver from, you know, taking the bus to school, to and from school every day. The driver could, you know, emphasize with the student, because he or she has students that ride the bus that have autism. So it's very, so that's one example. And then another area I cover a lot is tornado drills. Tornado drills are another aspect, because they're like fire drills. There are sirens involved, the tornado sirens, and you know, you can help the student prepare by maybe going into a closet or a safe or a room without not having the sound blaring in the student's ears. So that's one example. So So that's really what I kind of, that was one of the presentations. That's one of my core presentations that I bring up. I cover all the basics, fire, lockdown, school bus evacuation, tornado, and earthquake. So it's, so that's part of my core way of getting my message out there is through that presentation. And also share my experiences.
I love that. It's really just about exploring alternatives, right? When we look to teach kids in school, it would be great if everybody learned exactly the same way. You know, we could put everybody in the same room, give them all the same presentation, and everybody would walk, but that is not the reality. Period. And then, when we begin to accept and embrace the fact that we have a lot of neurodiversity in our classrooms, then we realize ever more so that it's important for us to look for alternative ways to meet the same set of objectives. And I love that you are taking this all hazards approach and you're inviting our schools to kind of, you know, think outside of the box in terms of keeping everybody safe. So Nick, the foundation does so many things to support families like ours with autism. People reach out to the foundation for resources, information. The networking is incredibly powerful for families, you know, just to not feel like you're isolated. But there's a lot of the work that you do that is very specifically safety related. I know we are so blessed to have Joey's Fund still part of the foundation. And I know year after year, a lot of the folks that reach out for assistance are looking for safety specific type supports. What are some of the things that you guys are seeing and are kind of focusing on there to support families?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. We find that, you know, safety is one of the, you know, we're at our core just here to help families. And the things we hear from families quite a bit is just, you know, basic safety of their child or from autism self-advocates themselves, you know, like Jeff. And so, you know, we do a lot of work around safety, a lot of partnerships with schools, police in particular. You know, we do a lot with police departments around everything from, safety bracelets, right? So, a large percentage of people on the autism spectrum are prone to wandering or bolting. Not everybody, but a lot of folks with autism. So, we work with local police departments to provide safety bracelets for families who are in need of them, so that if a child bolts or wanders, they can be tracked to safety quickly, that sort of thing. We also work with police just to do trainings in and of themselves around how to work with people with autism, we find that police are eager and ready to embrace the autism population, but oftentimes don't have the tools as they come up through the ranks and get the various trainings. And so we work with police to do trainings around autism, just how to de-escalate situations when you encounter somebody with autism, those sorts of things. What else? We do fences, right? So a lot of people.
Lots of fences.
Yeah. We do fences.
And swim lessons.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah, exactly. So swim lessons. And it sort of goes hand in hand because what we found is when somebody is prone to wandering, they often end up in or near water, and it could lead to, the worst possible case scenario, right? And so swim lessons is, you know, sometimes it's looked at as a form of recreation, but really it's a form of safety, because if you know how to swim, then you know how to avoid drowning. So, we funded through Joey's Fund. We funded a lot of families, a lot of individuals taking swim lessons and that sorts of thing. So, a lot of other stuff, but basically we just try to be responsive to a family's need and find a collaborative partner who we can work with to just help work both individually with families as well as communities as a whole. And that's kind of the work with like police departments say.
Yeah, it's It's really pretty amazing that like what you're talking about with the police departments, they are, you know, they are interacting with community members, adults and children, children often, you know, who are on the spectrum. And sadly, that's not part of the police academy training. You know, it's really incumbent upon that department to look out, to reach out for some of these trainings. And they are game changers, you know, to really empower our police officers to be able to identify those needs and to just be present, to de-escalate, I know for Josephine to know that that cruiser is a safe place, and that there's a car seat waiting for her, you know, that kind of, that kind of familiarity, that relationship building, can be a game changer in and of itself. But all of those practical things that are, so much to think of, and frankly, so expensive for a family, you know, to think about fencing your whole property, to think about the bracelets, the swim lessons. And if I can just geek out for a second on the swim lessons, yes, a safety, big reason that was a priority for us was safety, but also what it, you know, what we saw that it did for Joey's brain and her physical, you know, mobility and strength and her ability to interact with other kids. And there's just so much to those types of activities. It's, you know, it's just phenomenal what you're able to provide. So
Well, you know, and that's an example of, you know, when you're working, you know, obviously the safety is a pillar of ours. So is sort of fitness and athletics, just because of our founders, Doug and Lori Flutie, are very focused on that area. And so, you know, we find that, you know, hitting one of those pillars, so oftentimes it hits the rest of the pillars too, being social, being active, but also being safe. They're all, all kind of comes together, and being included in your community leads to safety as well. So if you're not isolated in your community, and that's what a lot of the police work, some of it's not very like technical autism training. It's just police departments who are all really good and want to do this, sort of taking the time to engage in their community, to get to know the families who are affected by autism. So heaven forbid they're ever in a situation where they need your help, there's already an existing relationship there. And like you said, you taught Joey that, you know, the police car isn't a bad thing. And the more you can kind of expose and make connections before a crisis occurs, then that way, if and when a crisis occurs, there's a level of familiarity there between the individual with autism as well as the police and that sort of thing.
100%. You know, Jeff, I want to talk a little bit about your advocacy specifically. It's so inspiring. You know, it's no small thing to grow up on the spectrum and to, you know, make your way, as you said, through the public school system and then, you know, successfully out into adulthood. And you have chosen to take your experiences, like if all that wasn't amazing enough, to really help other people understand, you know, interact successfully with neighbors, friends, family members, kids, and coworkers in their lives that have autism, and to really advocate, to be a voice for what that experience is like, and how we can all, particularly in our schools, do better with things like drills, with accommodations, and really helping to lift, you know, lift our students up into ideally a place where you are. It's just, as a teacher, nothing would have made me happier than to know that, you know, that one of my students had found, you know, a path to such success and such purpose. Talk about that journey a little bit.
Well, again, it was all through experience, and I was very fortunate to be in a school system that was very, you know, understanding, very accommodating, like CCOMP Public Schools. And I think, and plus when it came to the school safety drills, I got a huge support system in that. And, you know, it was really, really important for them to be on the level that I was on. And because I have because of my sensory processing disorder, which is part and parcel of my autism diagnosis, I couldn't really process what I wanted to say or what I should do. And when it came to a school safety drill, that made it 10 times more difficult. And I think, and I want to take that experience that I had from my time in CCOC and take it to people across the country. I mean, you know, cause you've got parents that, you know, have children with autism that they want to help their child, but they can't, you know, they don't know what to do. And so what I say is that you can help accommodate the student by, you know, stepping up for them, because you're the eyes and ears of the student. But the problem is that the child can't communicate with the parents because, you know, they could have trouble communicating. They could, you know, have behavioral issues. And some of them are even prone to, you know, as we talked about, wandering, because there's a fear that there's students that do tend to wander, particularly when it comes to a school safety drill. A couple months ago, I actually did a training at a new school down in Boca Raton, Florida. And one of the topics that I covered was maybe having a designated spot where you go to whenever you have a fire drill or a lockdown drill or anything like that, because students with autism will do anything to get out of a situation. And sometimes, you know, that could result in deadly consequences. The school I did the training at was located on the campus of Florida Atlantic University. And of course we talked about, you know, maybe having like some of the parking lot, like a spot in the parking lot the class could go to and stay in that spot until the drill is over. So, you know, it's
really a lot of pre-thinking, right? Like it's pre,
oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, like let's put out all our plays, right? Let's work out our plays. And so we know ahead of time, our kids know ahead of time, there are these designated, you know, places you could go, for safety, your safe spots, there would be somebody there to help you. Those things can be so helpful to our kids. And, you know, it's an interesting point that you brought up about, for a lot of our kids, you know, in a crisis with all that sensory and that overstimulation, it's like fight or flight kicks in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it feels like life or death, and they'll, you know, do anything that they can to just get the heck out of there. And not really, you know, be thinking about the fact that there's a, you know, highway out front or, you know, a dangerous neighborhood or, you know, any number of other hazards that keep a lot of our educators up at night, you know, worrying about those things. So really planning ahead and thinking through kind of multiple different layers and approaches and conversations. And you guys both know, we've put a lot of work into that at Safe and Sound Schools with our Especially Safe program. It's got kind of two, it's like a two-pronged approach where, you know, we talk a lot about that, like that, you know, game plan stuff, with the planning and preparation guide for staff, helping people think through, you know, are there any transportation or emotional and behavioral needs, communication needs, medical needs, security and supervision needs? Because as you mentioned, Jeff, in a time of crisis, it's chaotic. That's a time when, you know, an individual might self-evacuate, might run away, might, you know, bolt out into the neighborhood. So really thinking about those plans and individualizing them, you know, let's get it down to the level where we think about what Jeff's plan needs to be or what Joey's plan needs to be and what specific things we can do to support kids and adults in times of crisis. And then as well, let's think about how we're going to talk about it. You know, how are we going to teach kids? How are we going to train them in a way that's just right for them? Because it's not one size fits all. And I'm pretty sure that Jeff, you'll back me up on that. That I guess when, you know, CCONC kind of the light bulb went off at some point and they realized, you know, we have a student who wants to do all of these things. We just have to find another way to get there. And you thankfully were very helpful in getting them there and helping so many other communities do the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, again, it's, you know, by experience and I got my experience with CCONC by actually going through these drills. And now I've taken the steps to, you know, go across the country and share my story, because I think a lot of schools could benefit from, you know, something, you know, as important as school safety, because once again, you know, some schools may think that the child's opting out when in reality, we're just trying to make things easier for them.
100%. Yeah. And, you know, maybe at first they have to opt out of the traditional drill, but we can build up to that, you know, potentially. Yeah. We just got to go. We got to go about it a different way. Social stories and, you know, walkthroughs. I love your idea about the bus drill. Just, you know, it doesn't have to be in a giant group setting. We can begin getting a student familiar through a private drill, you know, and really leaning into the relationship with the bus driver is just brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Jeff, it's great that you guys are both trendsetters. So Jeff, it's great that you're sort of a trendsetter to having gone through the experience in these schools and to bring it to everyone's attention. And I think Michelle, the work that you have done, because Jeff noted earlier that it was built, this safety, things were built into, as you said, Jeff, they were built into your IEP, your individualized education program. And Michelle, you're talking about that as something that's happening more and more where you're individualizing these plans, but it wasn't necessarily a common thing. Cause you think about an individualized education plan and you've got to talk about math and you've got to talk about gym class and you've got to talk about, how transportation. So how much time does safety get in the, you know, in the agenda, so to speak, in the year round agenda of planning? And, credit to you both for bringing it to the forefront, because I think schools now are so much more prone to include safety as a core initiative of things they have to spend time on, because it's literally, unfortunately, it can come down to life or death, right? And so, Jeff, want to give you kudos for taking a leadership role in terms of not only helping schools realize that safety is important, but for people with disabilities and how we have to individualize it. It's so critical.
You know, you bring up a really good point too, Nick, with the IEP, and we have, what we developed is an ISP, individual safety plan. And what we learned is, at first I thought, you know, let's just build off the IEP. Like why invent something new? We have something that works and exists. And then as we began to get into it, and I was thinking about all those IEP meetings, I sat on both sides of the table, and time is limited. The number of goals are limited. It takes a lot of time and effort to get everybody around the table. And sometimes it can be, a pretty contentious process. It's a legally binding process, the IEP. So we thought, maybe we ought to create something separate that can be really nimble. It's not legally binding, but it's designed so that, you know, mom and dad and teacher and kind of like the individual safety team that would be assembled around an individual student can quickly update, customize, you know, change things out, and just have it, be what we teachers call quick and dirty. Like I can just pull it out and I get it. Like it's all kind of bullet points and easy to understand. Everything I need is in that, you know, that go bag that's with the student at all times, but really trying to separate that out is something that we have found to be really helpful. That's not to say that we wouldn't want to have a couple safety goals in the IEP if possible. But as far as that kind of the day-to-day safety needs, a lot of the kids who have ISPs now, they don't necessarily have an IEP. They might have a 504. They might not even have a 504. Maybe their sort of special need is specifically related to a prior trauma, or the fact that they're in a cast, you know, could be anything, but it does mean that we have got, you know, this individual's special and needs a special plan.
Love that. You've taken it to the next level, right? So just ensure that it has the real estate within the day-to-day planning. Safety needs to have the real estate that it deserves, right? And so it seems that you've accomplished that. That's great.
We're getting there. We're spreading the word, you know? Yeah,
right.
I'm just so grateful for the time that you guys were able to take together with me today and for the work that you're doing. You're two truly game-changing individuals out there in the field. And just so blessed to be able to do this work with you.
We hope you enjoyed this roundtable episode of The Sound Off. Thank you for listening and supporting our mission. If you'd like to learn more about Jeff and Nick's work or Safe and Sound's Especially Safe program, get in touch with us at safeandsoundschools.org. As we close this episode, remember that school safety is a collective responsibility, and together we can make a difference. Subscribe now to The Sound Off to stay informed and become part of our community. We have an exciting lineup planned for the upcoming season with fresh topics and deeper insights on how to protect every school and every student every day. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.